having the right information, operating on facts, is core to democracy, and I value that.
Mitchell Harris of Sunapee on why he decided to support NHPR as a Leadership Circle member.
I just want to get the facts, and I'll make up my own mind, and NHPR allows me to do that.
You can join Mitchell in supporting broad access to accurate information when you give $100 a month as a member of NHPR's Leadership Circle at nhpr.org/leaders.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Peter Biello, and this is a special post-Election Day edition of The Exchange. Last night, the polls closed, and as predicted, we woke up this morning without a clear winner. Pollsters told us we likely wouldn't know who won today, but still, it was tough not knowing right away. After all, it has been an emotionally charged 4 years. The president has thrown norms and traditions out the window, put in place policies that his predecessors couldn't or wouldn't, and feelings about his behavior and policies have been anything but tepid. Tonight on The Exchange, with the results of the presidential election still unknown and likely to be challenged by the losing candidate, we want to take a moment to ask you, how are you? What does this moment feel like to you? What's at stake for you in this election? Let us know. Our phone number is 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. You can also send us an email. The address is exchange@nhpr.org. Now, this morning, I woke up, I checked my phone right away, and I saw that we didn't know as much as I wanted to know. My eyes hurt from all the Twitter scrolling I'd been doing the night before. I made some coffee. The dog needed to be walked, so I took him out around the block, downtown Concord. While I walked, I tuned into a podcast. And if you're up early in the morning, you may have heard, as I did, how quiet the capital city was in particular. Now, Concord has been quiet most mornings during the pandemic, but today felt somewhat different to me. Maybe it did to you, too. It felt like we were waiting on a verdict, not on just these two presidential candidates, but on the character of the country. And yes, I know this is what candidates have been saying as well, that the results mean more than just approval or rejection of specific candidates. Principles are at stake. We have learned more since this morning. Even if we don't know everything yet, we can still talk about how we feel right now. It is time for a release of sorts, so it's time to talk. Let's talk. And to start our conversation, let's hear from a few people who called our hotline to share their thoughts before the show. As we work to get you that audio, I hope you can take some time to give us a phone call now. Our phone number, 1-800-892-6477. You can email us as well, exchange@nhpr.org. You can also reach us by posting on our Facebook page. Just search for NHPR Exchange on Facebook. Let's turn now to Andy Smith. He's director of the UNH Survey Center and associate professor of political science. Andy Smith, thank you very much for being on the program today.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So, Andy, as a journalist, I'm just swimming in political news. This is the biggest thing happening in my professional and personal life right now, it seems. But what do you know about how much people who aren't journalists are engaged in politics right now, and what gets them engaged, especially this year?
Well, I think when I talk about politics to students, I have to remind them that most people don't care about politics most of the time. That doesn't mean they don't care about politics when elections come around, but for the most part, the greater part of the electorate don't get too wound up with things. Unfortunately, people in our professions, we have to. Right. So we tend to get everybody's emotions for and against different candidates, the sense that this is our opportunity to change the world, or all doom and gloom, depending on our perspective. So we just have to step back a little bit and remember that for a lot of people in the country, this election is like other elections. Somebody wins, somebody loses, and life goes on.
And yet it seems to be a record turnout this year. The AP has reported, NPR has reported, that Joe Biden has received more votes than any presidential candidate in history. So what were the circumstances this year that got people so engaged? Was it, is the long and short answer there, the pandemic?
Pretty much. The things that drive turnout, are bad economic times and or warfare, either when we're going into war or having been in a war for too long, we want to get out. So essentially long-term kind of crises to the fundamentals of the society. And COVID to a certain extent brought on a lot of that. It brought on a lot of the fear that war brings on, the sense of an outside enemy that you really don't see and can't handle necessarily. So that heightens people's concerns. It certainly brought on economic crises in New Hampshire and other places around the country as well. And then on top of that, you have the remnants of a very unpopular election in 2016. Donald Trump has been an unpopular president throughout his candidacy and certainly controversial, regardless of whether you're a supporter of his or not. There's been a sense of angst or what's going to happen next that's gone on with this. Now, the practical parts of turnout increase that we've seen in recent months is because of the COVID-19 pandemic. States, including New Hampshire, have loosened their restrictions on voting in place. So in New Hampshire now, you could claim an absentee ballot by saying that you were concerned about contracting COVID by going to a polling place. Mm-hmm. And as a consequence, we've seen high turnout. Related to that is that the Democratic Party really wanted to make sure that they were able to bank those votes early on. And I think in New Hampshire and in many other states, it was an active campaign by the party to get those people out early. And here we were seeing in our polling that by people who were voting early, upwards of 80% were voting for Joe Biden compared to about 20% for Donald Trump. So there are both these factors here that were kind of the typical ones that political scientists look at: the state of the economy, the state of angst in the country, and then on top of that, the more mundane things like changing of laws and legal restrictions on voting, mm-hmm. and then parties taking advantage of those things, hoping to get an edge in how the election will turn out. So all of those things combined into record high turnout.
And to a really intense 48 hours, it seems. Let's go to the phones. Listeners, give us a call if you've got a thought, a feeling you need to express in this unique moment in American history. 1-800-892-6477. And let's hear from Ronell Chella, organizer with Black Lives Matter in New Hampshire. Ronell, thank you very much for joining us on the program. We really appreciate it.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So the big question is, how are you feeling?
I have mixed feelings about what's happening right now. You know, I've been flipping between channels and the news coverage, and I think Van Jones on CNN put it really great last night. He said, while a political victory may come, there is no moral victory in this election. You know, when you look at morality, it should be a blowout, but unfortunately that's not how politics works, and that's not what the science tells us about this. So yeah, I have super mixed feelings. I'm a little confident, but I was very confident in 2016, and this is 2020, so anything can happen at this point.
Certainly anything can happen. And when you say this hasn't been a moral victory, are you echoing the sentiments that I'm seeing on Twitter, which is essentially this is a close election, and it shouldn't be given all the things that the president has said to turn off people, things you would think would turn off people, but have not.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying. I think that the past 4 years has shown us who this man is. And I think by now everyone is very aware of the kind of person that he is. And it should not be this close. You know, we should not be sitting here the day after, almost 24 hours, more than 24 hours, actually, after the first polls close, and we still don't know who our president is going to be next term. It should not be this close. I am happy with it being a blowout in New Hampshire, obviously, but it should not be this close in other states. So that's super disappointing.
Mm-hmm. So how are you talking about the results so far with your friends and family? What's being said?
Yeah, so, you know, it's something that we definitely understand that a Biden presidency, it's not going to be perfect, but we do think that this is a step in the right direction. So it's a small victory. So if he is going to be our next president, then it's something that we're going to work with. Obviously, there's still a lot of work to be done, and I don't think that we're willing to back down from the fight that we've been fighting just yet. And so Yeah, I think that we're confident about what's happening now, and we hope it stays this way, and there's still a lot of work to be done regardless. So
where we are at this moment, NHPR is following the Associated Press and their results. We don't quite have one candidate reaching 270 electoral votes yet, but we're watching that closely. We hope that listeners will stay tuned to NHPR.org for the latest election results as well. We get a note on Twitter from someone who is saying, I am disheartened that so many Americans could support a demonstrably incompetent, dishonest, misogynist, racist, hateful fearmonger for a second time. Fool me once. Hopefully he will ultimately lose, but the culture and GOP that enabled his malfeasance persist. Seems like that's in line with what you were saying about the fact that this is not a moral victory, Ronelle Shella.
It is, and I think that just highlights the fact that there are a lot of deeper issues that we have to fix in this country, and it has not started and it will not end with Donald Trump. And I'm honestly surprised, and I shouldn't be, but I'm very, very surprised that it is this close. And I think that tweet just expressed that sentiment perfectly, honestly.
Yeah. So what are you doing to cope with all the uncertainty and perhaps the anxiety?
So I just came back from a Protect the Results rally, and the sense of community at that event was super great. I was really happy to be around people of color, and people that, you know, want this election to go a certain way. I've had so much anxiety. I've not slept or ate in literally 2 days. But, you know, and we're still in this. So I don't think anyone really expected it to be. At the beginning of this year, I don't think anybody expected this election to turn out the way that it is. But after COVID, everything was up in the air. And so I'm hanging in there.
Well, good to hear that you're hanging in there and keeping busy. Ronelle Shella of Black Lives Matter, thank you very much for sharing your thoughts with us. We really appreciate it.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
Ian on Facebook wrote to us to say, I think I'm holding it together, but some of my coworkers and friends have shared that they were scared and had anxiety. I confided with them that I am scared too, but I keep reminding myself that those concerned about today, that, in fact, democracy will prevail. I'm confident in time we can breathe a sigh of relief and we can begin the next step with our legislature. We will talk a little bit about the state legislature and local races later in this hour, but we do want to put your feelings at the forefront. And let's hear from Grace Donahue.
Hi, my name is Grace Donahue, and I'm a 30-year-old resident of Manchester, New Hampshire. I've lived in New Hampshire since I was about 3, and I grew up in a household of free-thinking people who really appreciate living in a state that embraces the concept of personal autonomy and critical thinking over top-down policymaking. I still feel this way in theory, but over the last few years, I've been increasingly disturbed to see quote-unquote civil liberties used as a catcall to white supremacy and states' rights here in New Hampshire. I think there's a huge difference between an individual making the choice not to wear a seatbelt and potentially dying in a car accident versus an individual choosing not to wear a mask and then arguing that they shouldn't face any accountability to others in their own community. The point to me of Live Free or Die has never been to absolve all individuals of accountability to a greater good, but instead to argue that the greater good should arise from the will of a free and critical thinking people, not from the will of kings, governors, or a wealthy elite. So today I'm feeling like we're clearly a state that is still thoroughly divided and will be for many years to come. And because of this, I'm hopeful but also pretty angry at the results of this election.
That's the comment from Grace. We also heard from Sean in Henniker, who says, I am on the edge of my seat waiting to see who wins, feeling apprehensive either way, given how close the election will be again. I've been reading what other country leaders are saying as we wait for the results. Polarization does not make us look like the leader in the world we once were. Sean also continues, I'm confused by the reporting. NPR has had Arizona going to Biden since this morning, but other TV major news outlets didn't call Arizona either way at that point. So why was there a difference, Sean wanted to know? And that might be a good question to put to you, Andy Smith, since you look at polling data all the time.
Good question. And I'm not sitting in the rooms with the maps there at the decision desk, as they call them. But I think what we're seeing in Arizona is there may have been a preliminary call for Arizona going to Biden before a lot of the votes were coming in. And I think that many of the media networks got a lot of pushback from the Trump campaign saying, wait a minute, You guys are jumping the gun. We think that we have the votes to win this state. So I think that it's up in the air. And several of the media organizations that either said that Nevada was going to, or excuse me, Arizona was going to Biden early on and pulled back in light of caution. And I think that's one of the things that I think that drives us nuts about elections is that eventually the votes are going to tell us who wins. And this time between when the election takes place and when the votes are finally counted, you know, there's really nothing we can do. So we ought to just kind of turn it all off for a while and go about our business. And that would relieve some of the angst that we've been hearing from some of the people calling in. Eventually, all the votes will get counted. Eventually, we'll know who the winner is. And stressing ourselves out for a few more days isn't really a healthy thing to do.
I see your point there. Are we not managing our expectations well, Andy Smith, when it comes to polling? Are we maybe putting too much faith in them? We were sort of jaded a little bit after the 2016 election. We heard explanations from folks like Nate Silver that says, well, you know, the outcome was in the margin of error for those states. But we adjusted in 2018. There were better results then. And so 2020, we thought, OK, the methods are different now. These polls are more trustworthy. And then here we are.
Well, I would start and say respectfully, Nate Silver is not a pollster. And I don't think he really understands survey research and all of the sources of error that are out there in surveys. Statistical issues are one thing. But the biggest problem that we have in surveys and doing polling is that we are asking individual people to express their opinions. And often they don't want to do that because they're afraid that their opinions aren't popular. This is something called the spiral of silence theory, which comes from a German public opinion researcher named Elisabeth Noella Neumann. And if we think our opinions or the candidate that we favor is unpopular, we're less likely to talk about them, not only to our friends and family members, but we're less likely to talk about those things to pollsters. And Trump has been a uniquely polarizing figure, both in 2016 and 2020. And there's evidence, certainly in 2016, but also even maybe more strongly in 2020, that a lot of Trump supporters are simply not talking to pollsters, either by telephone, if they call and contact them that way, or through web-based surveys. And consequently, pollsters are missing a lot of that support. So the thing that about the polls, and I would say that the state polls were better this year, the national polls were further off, but the thing about the polls is that they were all biased in the Democratic direction, both in 2016 and 2020. That's not typical. That's not margin of sampling error issues. That's an indication that there's a bias in the kind of people that polls are talking to. So I would say always that polls are a snapshot. We use polls at UNH to try to improve methods that we use to get a better sense of what's going on with the electorate in other research that we do, because polls, election polls are the one time that you have an actual event that you can compare your results to. But I think the problem that we get is that the media frankly get lazy because polls become clickbait for their websites. And it's an easy way to flesh out a story by talking about a poll. And then the polling aggregators, I think, do a real disservice by trying to put percentages on top of those, or likelihoods of one candidate winning or another. And they don't really do that much to vet the quality of the data going in. So there's the old saying about models, garbage in, garbage out. And I think that's what we've seen both in 2016 and 2020.
We don't want to spend too much time talking about polls, whether they are accurate reflections of the reality on the ground or not. But we do want to focus on this emotional moment. If you're feeling anxiety, if you're feeling joy over the fact that Election Day is finally behind us, whatever you're feeling, give us a call. 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR, or email us. The address is exchange@nhpr.org. Bob and Tina wrote in to say, my big disappointment in all this is that so many Americans voted for a man, the administration, that has been so adversarial, so in your face, lied endlessly, insulted and denigrated Americans who have served our country honorably, stated openly, I don't take responsibility for so much COVID death and chaos throughout our country. That's the note from Bob and Tina. We also heard from Alex in Epsom, who wrote to us saying, I'd like to say that I am cautiously optimistic about how New Hampshire will fare, but I am not happy at all about how the nation is doing. Since there is a Republican quadfecta in Concord, the gridlock of the last 2 years will likely reduce. They'll pass a budget on time and finally fill the vacant Supreme Court seat. However, in D.C., the Republican Senate will likely cause insurmountable gridlock, bickering, and bad feelings. I'm especially concerned that Majority Leader McConnell will stymie the recession recovery like the Republicans did after they took Congress in 2010. That hurt our country so much, and our civic fabric can't withstand another period like that. Thank you very much, Alex, for your note. If you have a question or a comment or you'd like to express your feelings in this moment, give us a call. The number is 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. This is a moment to just get it off your chest. It's been a long election season. For some, it's been a long 4 years. Tell us how you're feeling. We really want to know. 1-800-892-6477. I'm Peter Biello, and this is The Exchange. We'll be right back. This is The Exchange on NHPR. I'm Peter Biello. And on this day after Election Day, we're taking stock of your feelings. We want to know how you're feeling today. And in this part of the program, we really want to be able to talk about how you're talking about politics with your friends and family. Do you feel like you can? How much has the politics of the last 4 years changed your relationships or how you talk with people? Reach us now by phone. The number is 1-800-892-6477. You can also email us. The address is exchange@nhpr.org. Let's hear a bit from some folks who called and left us voicemails before the show today.
I'm feeling anxious. I'm feeling really emotional. And it's, I know, a very tight race. And I think regardless of who wins, we've got 50%, almost 50% of the population that's going to be really unhappy and really angry and really disgruntled. And it makes me sad to think that we might not be able to get past this within the immediate future and that it's going to take a long time of healing.
Today I'm feeling like we're clearly a state that is still thoroughly divided and will be for many years to come. And because of this, I'm hopeful but also pretty angry at the results of this election. If we're being honest, I don't think I'm alone in saying that I'm a mix of emotions because of this election. You know, I'm hopeful and optimistic, but I'm also terrified. People's basic human rights are at stake.
Those are some of the folks who left us voicemails before the show today. We've got with us Andy Smith. He's director of the UNH Survey Center and associate professor of political science. We talked a little bit about polling, but he's not here just for polling. He's here because he's, well, plugged into the political scene, especially on campus there, right? Andy, because you work at UNH, obviously. Can you tell us a little bit about what the atmosphere has been like there?
Yeah, and I first want to say thank you to Ronell for calling in. She's one of my students in a seminar on American government, which has been quite lively this year, as you might imagine, given all of the things that are going on. But that said, the climate at UNH this year is really quite unusual politically because it is so dead because of COVID and the restrictions placed on students because of it. A lot of the difficulty with college students is that a lot of them have other things to worry about other than politics, you know, jobs, studies, boyfriends and girlfriends, et cetera. And to get them to be interested in politics, you really have to do a lot socially to get them engaged. But you can't do that in this time of COVID. You can't have dorm parties. You can't knock on doors. You can't have the rallies or bring in bands and so forth like Bernie Sanders did before the New Hampshire primary back in February.
Yeah.
So I just know,
Andy, like thinking about what you said about campus and kids not college students not being able to get together. Like one of my favorite parts of college was just sitting around in the student union or in the dorm room talking about politics or talking about literature, but you know, politics too. I remember being in college when we invaded Iraq and everybody just stopped doing what we were doing and started talking about whether or not the decision to invade Iraq was the right one. And it was a part of the college experience that, wow, I really hope today's college students are able to get somehow. Who knows? Maybe they're gathering around their computers and doing it by Zoom.
But Zoom, as you know, is just not the same thing.
No, it's definitely not.
The other thing that happened that was really unusual this year is that the enthusiasm on campus on election day just wasn't there at all. Typically, there's buses around campus. There's people honking their horns. There's signs. There's all of the hoopla that goes along with politics. And that was reflected in the turnout in Durham. Back in 2016, it set a record of 9,600 votes in Durham. This year was only 7,700 votes. That's 2,000 fewer votes just out of Durham. And I would say that most of those were probably students who either didn't vote or who weren't here. So there just wasn't the same enthusiasm. And I'm pretty sure that UNH was not different than most colleges and universities across the country. It's just so unusual not being able to talk with people and express yourself to people face-to-face about politics. And I think that actually, that may be one of the reasons that this election seems so much more divisive than others, is that we haven't had the opportunity to hear the other side. If you go online and you're talking on Facebook or other social media, you're in the echo chamber, mm-hmm. and you tend to seek reinforcement for your feelings, and you don't really get to listen to the other side. And I think that in the long run is really harmful. And that's probably going to be one of the lingering aftermaths of this election, just as it was after the 2016 election. A lot of hurt feelings that weren't settled, a lot of sense that the election was unfair. And I think we're going to see the same sort of thing after this election, unfortunately.
Well, let's consider this hour a safe zone for anybody who wants to share their opinions. No matter what side you are on, we want to know how you feel, too, and how you feel about how you talk to your fellow Granite Stater, or your family members from out of state, for that matter. We want to know. Let's go to the phones. Our phone number, 1-800-892-6477. And let's start with talking to Bill in Manchester. Bill, thank you very much for calling. How are you feeling?
Hey, thanks for taking the call. Just want to say a quick thanks to all the poll workers that I interacted with when I went to go vote. My wife and I, we had to leave our kids in the car while we went to go vote one at a time because somebody had to watch the kids. So it took us a little bit longer to vote, but thanks to all the poll workers for keeping everything organized and sane. And it was a pretty pleasant experience, and it was nice to go vote. What I wanted to say about the feelings right now that everybody's having is that this 50-50 of, oh, the race looks so close, how can so many people support Donald Trump? I think we have to remember that, I don't know what the exact percentage is, but I think it's only around half or maybe like 60% of the total population of America is voting. And that really, if everyone were compelled to vote, the race wouldn't be as close as it is. That's why it gives me hope to know that most people, when they hear Donald Trump, they roll their eyes and they forget about it, or they don't support the man. And just like the people you interact with online, they're brave enough to post something on Facebook in support of either candidate, represent a small minority of what people are truly thinking and feeling. Mm-hmm. So it looks on the screen like it's 50-50, when in reality, if everyone voted, you would see it's probably 2/3 closer to normal rational thinking.
Yeah.
And
well,
a third. Can the vocal minority supporting Trump.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear your point. Can I ask you about you and your personal relationships? How do you go about speaking with those who disagree with you? Are you maintaining relationships despite political differences?
You know, it's tough nowadays to maintain relationships despite political differences for two reasons. One, you're isolated from everyone a lot more than you were 6 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
So it's tough to stay friends with everybody, regardless of their political differences. But when you see somebody posting the exact opposite of what you feel online or on Facebook, it definitely strains the relationship that you have with them inside your own head. Maybe it doesn't really change things in reality between you and, you know, whoever you're interacting with by reading what they've written. But it does strain things. And the whole thing is the stress. Just being isolated from people. Reading Facebook and Twitter constantly is a stressor. And I think a lot of people have seen the documentary, The Social Dilemma. I think that's what it was called. And
this documentary is about there are echo chambers among social media that sort of keep feeding you the stuff that keeps you engaged, even if that stuff is not necessarily, let's say, nourishing for the intellect.
Sure. Yeah. Just like they used to say, comic books rot the brain. Do you think really it's good to be reading Facebook for 4+ hours a day? It's really not, right? So at the end of the day, we have to remember that the vast majority of people are out there are good-natured. They want good things for other people. And even the people that come across saying what you think are vile things written online, they're just having a different take of how to solve the problems we all want to solve, like homelessness and income inequality. Whether they put different labels on it or they have, you know, different solutions to it, they are only identifying the problem. It's tough for everybody to be reading people's internal thoughts and feelings, people using Facebook like a diary.
Yeah.
And then you read something at 2 p.m. that somebody wrote at 4 a.m. and all of a sudden you're all riled up and you're like, hey, I need to fix the way that person is thinking.
Yeah, I mean, social media is certainly a rabbit hole that we could spend a whole hour talking about. But Bill, I want to thank you for your call and your insights. Really appreciate it. Listeners, please do give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Let's talk to Michelle in Keene. Thank you very much, Michelle. What's up? How are you feeling?
Hi. I am feeling very concerned that the horrendous climate change issues that are happening in our world are being lost in the fray right now. And I'm very afraid that a Republican-controlled Senate, if that's what we end up with, will lose the opportunity that we have right now to make substantial gains in energy efficiency and alternative energy, renewable energy projects, the jobs that that can offer, the knowledge that we gain, that they completely will not be possible in a Republican-controlled Senate. So I am very hopeful that we do end up with a Democratic-controlled Senate that will allow us to push Biden in that direction. I know it's not in his current platform, but I do not believe that he will veto legislation that comes to him from our legislators and from those of us citizens who are asking for us to address our responsibility in climate change issues and the damage that they are wreaking on our quality of life all throughout the entire Earth.
Climate change, very important and certainly worth worrying over. Michelle, thank you very much. Really appreciate you taking the time to call. Listeners, please do join the conversation. You can also join us by email. Just send a note to exchange@nhpr.org. Let's talk to Andrea in Concord. Andrea, thank you very much for calling. How are you feeling?
Thanks, Peter. Well, first, I just want to say thank you to the poll workers as well and those who are continually counting absentee ballots and everything that was sent in. I know it's going to be several days here, so you know, we have to remain patient, but then also support those who are volunteering. And on that same note, I mean, I'm feeling very anxious. I think that's kind of the same feeling that a lot of people have been sharing. But anxious for, like, the future of our basic human rights. I feel like they're hanging in the balance here. And I'm very concerned. You know, I have a lot of friends who are people of color, coworkers. You know, a lot of my coworkers are here on work visas, and, you know, they're all under attack. And in a world that's, you know, 2020 has been a lot of personal change, I feel like the future could be more additional change. It can be very isolating. So it's a little scary.
Yeah, it's certainly very scary. Andrea, thank you very much for calling. Really appreciate it. Let's talk to Karen, who's on the Seacoast. Karen, thank you very much for calling. How are you feeling?
Hi, good evening, Peter. Thank you. You know, first of all, I'd like to say that I'm very proud that for the first time yesterday, my 18-year-old, who turned 18 three days ago, registered to vote. So that was just an amazing feeling for our family, watching her do that. And speaking of family, that's kind of how I'm feeling. I feel very divided and very conflicted and very anxious. 4 years ago, when the election took place, I saw the difference in my extended family. And it's really caused a rift. It's one thing, I think, to disagree on policies and on political issues, whether, you know, whatever they may be. But this to me is a moral issue, and this is not politics as usual. And so for me, and for, you know, I feel a real divide with my family, with my extended family.
So Karen, how do you manage that divide? When you're talking about, you know, it's not just a policy difference, it's a difference on morality. How do you manage that?
I don't.
You don't.
It really hits me to my core. I mean, I think of, you know, some senior members of my family, people that raised me. You raised me with good moral values. You raised it. And I don't know then how you landed where you are now. And it's really difficult for me to reconcile. So frankly, I choose not to. And so unfortunately, I feel like, you know, my family group has gotten smaller for me because I can't reconcile that. And often, you know, they'll make jokes about it and they think it's kind of funny, like, oh, you know, we'll get to the other side of this. I'm like, no, I don't think we will. I think given where we're at right now, we're setting the country back on human rights, on human dignity, in ways that we may, in the environment, in ways that we may never be able to recover for generations.
Well, Karen, thank you very much. And sorry it's been so difficult for you and your family. I know you're not alone. There are other folks who feel exactly that way. A lot of us struggling to find the right way to show the people in our lives that we love them while also disagreeing with them very strongly on, as you say, Karen, not just policy issues, but moral issues. Those are the things that we hold very close to our identity. And when they come into conflict, it can be really tough. Thank you again, Karen. Really appreciate it. Give us a call if you have a thought or a feeling you'd like to share at this moment in American history. 1-800-892-6477. Let's talk to Peter in Derry. Peter, thank you very much for calling.
Hi.
How are you feeling?
I'm feeling pretty conflicted right now and a little, you know, anxious in general. I think that's the common theme and feeling that's been going on lately with everyone, regardless of whoever anyone voted for. You know, things right now I feel sort of uncertain about what the future is going to be holding for us, not just as Americans and not just, I'm 24, so I'm obviously part of a younger generation. So, but not just that, but globally, things feel really uncertain, not just in the U.S., but throughout the entire world right now. And it's
can you be more specific, Peter? Like, where's the focus point of your worry? Is it for yourself, your family, some other area of your life? What do you think?
I think honestly, obviously, of course, I'm worried about myself and my family. I think most people would be, but I do feel like in general, society feels sort of uneasy, and I'm worried about that in a sense. It feels like things are continuously building up some sort of pressure. And people throughout the globe right now seem really on edge. And I'm worried that that could result in violence or just a continued push of hatred amongst individuals right now.
Well, Peter, thank you very much for your call. I'm sure you're not alone in that sentiment. You're listening to The Exchange on NHPR, and we're taking a moment to sort of let our feelings out in this public forum, have a discussion about not just politics, but the feelings behind them. How we feel in this moment of uncertainty. We still don't know the results of the presidential election, and the Senate is still kind of up in the air. We're bringing results through other platforms here on NHPR. We hope that you will share your emotional reality with us right now. Our phone number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or email exchange@nhpr.org. I'm Peter Biello, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Exchange on NHPR. I'm Peter Biello, and this is a special edition of The Exchange, a special post-election day edition. We're trying to get a handle on how we feel about the results of this election as we understand them so far. Of course, a lot of things still in flux. NHPR is tracking results, and we'll bring you the results once we are certain of them, of course, following the standard set by the Associated Press. Reach us now if you'd like to share how you feel in this moment. We've heard a lot from folks who feel like they are anxious. We want to know how you're coping with it. Are you turning off the news at a certain hour because you just can't stand listening to it all day long? Are you plugged in because you just have to know? Are you exercising? Are you reading some fiction, listening to music, cooking? Are you, like I am, compulsively eating bits of Halloween candy? We all have our methods, right? Give us a call. Let us know what yours is. 1-800-892-6477. We've still got Andy Smith with us. He's the director of the UNH Survey Center and associate professor of political science. And Andy, before the break, we were talking a little bit about, you know, what it's like to talk with family members and friends about political differences. And I was wondering what your experience with that has been.
Well, I'll talk about some polling that we've done.
Oh, darn.
I think this is interesting because, well, it's interesting polling, and it's about family and friends. But it's interesting, even from this conversation today, we've had all essentially people who are not friends of Donald Trump calling in, talking to, so this is a little bit of an echo chamber, but it's important to remember that there's a whole nother group out there that are feeling the same way. So, but we ask people about their willingness to talk about their support publicly. And what we found is that, believe it or not, as many people don't believe it, is that Trump supporters are far more fearful and far more concerned about expressing their political views than our Biden supporters. So 45% of Trump supporters say that they don't express their support for Trump to their friends or coworkers, compared to only 24% of Biden supporters here in New Hampshire. 42% of Trump supporters say they won't even talk about their support for Trump to family members, compared to only 19% of Biden supporters. So there are a lot of Trump supporters out there who are really just not willing to talk about it. And that's got to build up a lot of angst in them as well. And I think we feel that in our politics, that there's a sense that you can't even express yourself. If you're not allowed to express yourself politically, if you're not allowed to hold views that other people will criticize you for, it makes this game far more personal, far more, there's more tension involved in all of the relationships. One of the callers that called in said that they are basically cutting off some of their family members because of their support for a different candidate. And that, I think, is some of the real unfortunate things that are coming out of this period, not just this year, but I think it's really been growing even since the 2000 election, where this sense of division and polarization in the country has been growing year on year.
We get this note along those lines from Sarah in Walpole, who says, "I've been scratching my head over how anyone can support Trump since 2016 when he openly mocked a disabled reporter. It's come to the point, though, the last 4 years of watching him make a mockery of our highest office, where I have drawn a line in the sand. I cannot find a shred of respect for anyone who supports Trump." That is a very hard line in the sand, Andy Smith. And if you're not going to respect someone, it's really hard to have a relationship with them. And that makes it hard. And if Trump supporters see people like Sarah feeling that way, what you say holds up. They're not going to want to say it.
They're not going to want to say it. There's not going to be any opportunity to have a real discussion with people to understand why it is that they feel that way. And I think that's one of the things about politics that we forget about, is that so much of it is habitual and emotional. A guy I knew in Wisconsin used to say that rationalization is the second strongest human drive, and that we can rationalize why we support one candidate over another. It's like the irrationality of our support for for professional sports teams. Why do we think that the Yankees are great the Red Sox are great?
No, you're right the first time.
That the Yankees are the evil empire. You know, we get this idea that, and when their truth is, they're both big corporations.
But nobody has a moral attachment to the Yankees, at least I don't, in the same way that they have to a political position that they believe might help or harm someone.
I think that many people might do that. Maybe looking at the Patriots this year and how well they're doing, they might have that as well. But you're right. There is an emotional and a moral tone that's tied into politics now that we haven't seen. One of the other things that I think is really problematic in American politics is that The biggest predictor of how somebody's going to vote is their partisanship. We know that. That's nothing new. But the second biggest predictor is somebody's religiosity. That is how often they go to church. If you go to church regularly, you're going to vote for Republicans two-thirds of the time. If you never go to church, you're going to vote for Democrats two-thirds of the time. And that sets up this sense where you've got groups that distrust people's basic fundamental perceptions of the world, of the universe, and people's places in the universe. And I think that makes it very, very hard to come to some sort of common ground about fundamental principles and what we all agree on, because we distrust where people are coming from.
Well, let's go to the phones and talk to Vincent in Epsom. Vincent, thank you very much for calling. How are you feeling?
Hi, thanks for taking my call, Peter. Yeah, I guess I'm feeling obviously unsure about who's going to win this election for president. And I know that it's kind of still a toss-up for the Senate as well. But what I'm really focusing on is what's going to happen after the next president is installed or reinstalled, and how, if at all, or if there will be kind of an increase on agreement between the parties, or if there's going to be any like bipartisan working, you know, across the aisle. Because once we get out of COVID, right, and I know it's hard to even think that far ahead, there's a lot of other things, like one of the callers was talking about, you know, climate change or the environment, that is really going to require a lot of bipartisan agreement to even pass any bill. And the way that things have been looking, I guess, ever since 2010, it seems like it's nearly impossible to pass anything bipartisan through the Senate and to get any president to sign something, because there's so much disagreement. And so that's the main thing that I'm, I guess, worried about is the division going to get deeper after this is all said and done, or is it going to start to heal itself? Is the country going to start to maybe agree a little bit more than I've ever seen in my lifetime? So,
and what would your prediction on that be, Vincent? Are we going to be more bipartisan, or is it going to get worse?
Well, I, in my own opinion, I would think that it depends on who's elected president. In my opinion, and you know, I'm a Democrat voter. I think that if Joe Biden is elected, or at least I hope, then he'll be open to agreeing across, you know, across the aisle. But obviously, that kind of that starts in our House of Representatives, and that starts in the Senate as well, to see if they're even agreeing in the first place. If Mitch McConnell isn't putting stuff on the floor that needs to be put on the floor, and if Nancy Pelosi or the Democrats in the House aren't coming up with bills that can be reasonable for both sides, then no, I don't think that even Joe Biden would be able to mend that lack of bipartisanship. So I guess it's kind of hard for me to say.
Yeah, hard to say, certainly, but we appreciate your insight. Thank you very much, Vincent. And listeners, you still have time to weigh in. We'd love to hear from you. Tell us how you're feeling. 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. And let's go to one of the voicemails that we received before the show. Let's listen to one left by Henry.
This election, I voted for Trump. My reason for voting for Donald Trump was strengthen military, lower taxes. I also do not like the, you know, medical to be kind of government-approved medical. I like, you know, private medical insurance. So those are my three main points.
So, Andy Smith, there's a voter there voting for Trump and choosing some policy reasons, not just identifying with him because he has presented an image of someone who is successful and strong, but someone who's going to lower taxes, strengthen the military, and prevent the government from taking over health care. Are those big issues, as far as you could tell, among Trump supporters?
Actually, it's really fascinating when you look at people in New Hampshire about why they are voting the way they are. First of all, about 75% of Trump voters say their vote is more for Trump than it is against Joe Biden. For Biden supporters, 56% say their vote is against Trump. Only 42% say it's something for Biden. And when you ask people, what are the most important reasons you're voting for somebody? For Trump supporters, they say there's leadership, there's performance in the job, jobs in the economy, American values, some things like that. for Biden supporters, half of them say that the reason that they're voting is just because they're voting against Donald Trump. So there is this animosity towards Trump on the part of Biden supporters, whether you agree with the, if it's merited or not. But Trump supporters aren't really talking about that. They are falling back on policy issues more so than Democrats have been or Biden supporters have been. And that in part, I think, is because when you have a president and he's running for re-election, they have a record, and you can point, and their supporters tend to point to that record. Whereas the person that's the challenger has to do something to knock the incumbent down a bit in order to have a chance of winning.
Jacob wrote to us to say, I'm feeling worried. I have many LGBTQ friends, and the fact that we might have to endure another 4 years of someone whose actions have been very anti-LGBTQ definitely scary to us. Rich also wrote us to say, I am a 30-year-old independent who tends to vote for social issues with tertiary consideration for fiscal policies. I'm happy to see that Biden won Arizona, as I voted for him. That being said, I am saddened at how close the election is. Anyone who's paid attention the last 4 years and can willfully ignore Trump's attitude toward democracy has no place in modern society. The president has incited racial tensions, condoned concentration camps for immigrants, refused to denounce white supremacy when given the chance to do so on nationally broadcast program. He's perpetually belittled women and minorities. He's mocked the physically disabled and disrespected those who give their lives for our country. I don't know if Republicans vote party lines for the sake of opposition or if they truly do not care. Either way, I've never had an impending win leave such a bitter taste in my mouth. That's the comment from Rich. Listeners, please give us a call if you have a thought you'd like to share. 1-800-892-6477. Tell us how you are getting yourself through this moment of uncertainty. 1-800-892-6477. On the subject of being able to have constructive conversations across the political divide, I'm going to play some tape for you. Here is Erica Perez of Black Lives Matter Manchester speaking earlier today.
I know that there are people in this audience who didn't have a conversation with someone because they thought that it would be too hard. I know that there are. And I know that there are people in this audience whose parents are Republican because they tell me.
That's Erica Perez speaking earlier today at a rally in Concord. And you can hear the frustration in her voice about how difficult it's been to have conversations across the aisle. Andy, as the days unfold here and we get more results from the AP and other reliable sources, what will you be watching for? And not just as far as the numbers go, but as far as people's behavior toward it. What will you be looking for?
Well, the thing that I think is going to happen really next is that the lawyers are going to become trooping in by both the Trump side and the Biden side, and we're going to see this thing litigated for a while. There's some state-imposed deadlines for getting information to getting the vote certified, and I think that we're going to see something similar to the 2000 election when it comes to that. And the problem with that is then you hear a lot of stories, the conspiracy theories coming from both sides as to what is happening, how it's being rigged here or there. And I think that's going to be the thing that is going to continue this angst. It's going to continue this sense of something going on that's out of our control. And half of the country, roughly, or half the voters in the country are roughly going to feel betrayed at the outcome of this. And that, I think, is going to set whoever the president is up for a very bad first term or second term. And then I think also that regardless of who the president is, the opposing party is going to win big in 2022. And we're going to have the same sort of gridlock that we've had for the last 10 years or so.
Let's hear from another listener. And Amy left us a voicemail before the show today.
I'm worried about what will fill the narrative in the U.S. post-election when we're faced with this wave of COVID. But most of all, I think I'm worried about the mental health of my loved ones and the people they're close to. I mean, with winter and COVID and the election and the holidays, it's a really difficult time for mental health, and we don't necessarily have the same tools in our toolbox right now to manage our meaningful connections to other people. So, yeah, I feel like that's probably my main concern, but we can breathe now, right?
Let's hope we can take a deep breath. Andy Smith, thank you for being on the program with us today. We really appreciate it.
Appreciate having the opportunity, and I hope everybody gets through all this and comes out the other side with at least a little bit of a smile on their face.
Deep breaths, everybody. Again, Andy Smith, thank you. Andy Smith is the director of the UNH Survey Center and associate professor of political science. Over the next few days, we're going to be writing what is essentially the first draft of history in this historic election. And given that emotions are so high right now and bad information can flow so quickly, my personal hope is that we can adopt the best practices of journalists, which is keep your emotions in check and second and third source everything. There's enough information out there and enough time to take a look at what the best information is, process it, and think about what's important to you. At least I hope that's what you do. And this is The Exchange, special post-election edition, a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. Today's show was produced by Christina Phillips. Our engineer is Emily Quirk. Our executive producer is Michael Brindley. Our senior producer is Ellen Grimm. Our producers include Jessica Hunt and fellow Jane Vaughn. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. Thank you for spending some time with us tonight. I'm Peter Biello.